Comics Podcast, episode 18. I'm Keith.
I'm Zach.
I'm Sean.
And Richie's here, we promise. He's not dead.
I'm Ricky.
There you go.
I know.
I'm Richie. Frank Miller. Some
Frank
other
Miller
stuff. Batman.
So, Richie's out there helping customers. We're a little light-handed tonight, so we're getting things fired up. Yep. Let's jump and run. This may be a short episode, guys. We'll get to why here in a little bit. But yep. Zach, what do you got news?
A couple things. Today, it was announced that the numbers for the last 3 months of DC Comics Rebirth has been 12 million copies sold to retailers. Now, I was talking earlier with somebody, and this means that this is how many that DC has sold through Diamond to comic book stores. That doesn't mean that 12 million copies are in people's hands. It means that the stores have received that many. And that's every title. That's all the titles across the board.
You've got some things out there, like, say, Harley Quinn and Batman number ones were both huge variant covers. There was a lot of different custom variants done for some different places. And most of those custom print runs are usually a minimum of 2,500 to 10,000 copies each. You know, so you can have a lot of duplicates inside all of those numbers too.
Yep. So that was the big that was kind of the big news was the last 3 months of that. Some of DC books, the DC books from the last 3 months have been in the top five. I found pretty interesting. Black Panther is the first Marvel book at number six, and they are at so they're at like 250,000 copies right now.
Wow.
What they're going through, which I thought was interesting. You know, it's like Keith said, it's like Batman, Harley Quinn, things like that in the top five. But I just wanted to bring.
I never guessed the Black Panther was Marvel's first.
I did not realize that either.
They had a massive promotion on that,
Was Civil War has been a little late, right?
Civil War's been late, and also just the last week there was a woman came in who they're teaching this arc, this first six issues in college.
Oh.
Right now.
Interesting.
One of her books for this semester was The First Trade, which just came out last week.
You also have a high possibility that Black Panther would be a good target for, say, like the Marvel Core box or the Loot Crate or something like that, too.
So that was very interesting. One of the things that was very touted for a couple weeks leading up to it was MU. For a while, Marvel has...
F-U.
Not F-U. M-U.
M-U. Marvel said, hey, we're going to make an announcement on the certain day, at the certain time. And some of the biggest rumors out there, M-U was going to be Mutant Universe. They were going to get rid of the X-Men, put them in their own universe. There was going to be Mutant University, another offshoot book. But out of nowhere came Monsters Unleashed. Written by Cullen Bunn, with art by Greg Land.
I dig Cullen Bunn.
Cullen Bunn, yeah. And they're bringing back the old monster.
Like Amazing Fantasy style stuff?
Yeah, like the Man-Thing and the werewolf and, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, so it's like the 70s monster.
Kind of stuff, yes. That's going to be coming out in January.
That's kinda cool.
Yeah, so it was interesting. Nobody was guessing that. That was pretty interesting.
If somebody's writing monster stuff, he's actually, some of his independent books and whatnot that he's written that have been monster have been really good.
Yeah, Cullen Bunn's a good writer, and it'll be interesting, and I personally like Greg Land's art, so it'll be cool to see. Then the other thing was just this past week at Baltimore, at some of the different panels, they talked about things that they're going to announce for New York Comic Con. There's going to be some big announcements. We talked about it last week with Valiant. There's supposed to be some Valiant news, which we have heard rumors is going to be the web series. So we may get confirmation on that. The other thing was that they announced at Baltimore that there is going to be a Legion of Superheroes book, and that one of the writers on the panel was going to be one of the writers. Now, of course, the panel was Paul Levitz, Keith Giffen, Jerry Ordway, Steve Orlando, and Tom King. So the rumors are is that it might be Tom King, because he used one of the Legion characters in Omega Men. People have said Keith Giffen and Paul Levitz have done it for like 30 years, so that would be, so, you know, that's the first thing that people went to, but the other rumor from that, they said, was that Jim Lee really loves the Legion, and he would love to see that book be successful. So the rumors are that he may be doing covers or maybe interior art for some of that as well. We'll know at New York Comic Con. That's when they said they would announce it. And they did announce that Justice League of America, the rebirth that was teased back a couple months ago, the writer is going to be Steve Orlando, who's writing Supergirl right now. They have not announced an artist as of yet. So, and again, they said keep tuned to New York Comic Con for more news. So,
it's the end of the season, is NYCC.
Yep, and that's the last time for big announcements. So, we'll see what happens there. And that's pretty much it for the news. It was pretty.
That's the good news.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, going into Labor Day weekend, we weren't expecting a lot of people to be dropping a whole bunch of bombs anyway.
Right. Nope.
So normally we would be getting here to Picks of the Week, but we're going to start Picks of the Week with an asterisk. And the asterisk was, is last week was that fifth week of the month.
Fifth week, yeah.
The time where we talk about how books, sometimes the late stuff comes out, sometimes it's annual, sometimes it's things like this.
Yep.
And unanimously across the board, four-way decision here, we do not have Picks of the Week.
Nope.
It's not to say anything last week was just terrible and just not worth reading.
Just not anything that stood out made me go, you gotta read this.
I mean there's some books that came out that were fun, that were good, but nothing that was like, you have to come in and read this right now. It's, and that's kind of what Pixar's.
Everything was on its course. The annuals were just fine. Nothing impactful, nothing monumental or earth-shaking and things like that. Most of the annuals, the annual stuff was prior to Rebirth. Titles.
Yep, Earth 2. Like,
yeah, there was stuff that's still wrapping up their stories.
It's cleanup, basically.
Yeah.
So pieces like that, and some of the heavy hitter books are coming out this week anyway. So you take a look at what's on the rack this week. You know, you've got quite a bit out there to look at and choose from this week and all this. So again, read your books, but we just don't have anything to absolutely put in your hands and say you gotta be reading this one.
Yep, absolutely.
So, making it easy, we are going to go straight into spinning the racks here.
Spinning the racks, yep.
Spinning the racks! Da-da-na, da-da-na. Da-da-na, da-da-na. Spinning the racks!
And for spinning the racks this week, another user-suggested topic kind of flows in really well with what we had previously, is the synergy of doing your top three Marvel stories. Is we're going to lead into top three DC stories.
Yep.
Inside this, our rules, our qualifications were really the biggest thing that we had in all this is that we kept Vertigo stories outside of this.
Yes.
Vertigo has created their own large foundation of everything. We've talked about it somewhat inside the independent show. We've talked about it other times, but it gets treated as its own little world.
Yes.
So we're not looking at that type of stuff. So if we give a slight to and don't mention one of your Vertigo titles, just know that that wasn't part of our selection criteria when we had that right there.
Yes.
And I'm willing to jump right in with Sean's picks and go here, because this has been a great deal of fun today keeping Zach in the dark about what Sean did pick.
Yeah, because it's pretty easy. I mean, Richie and I were DC fanboys, so him and I were we had guessed each other's picks pretty well. I mean, we were about
Mark Miller,
pretty much. And then trying to figure out Keith and Sean's. Trying to figure out Keith and Sean's has been a lot of fun for us today. Richie and I have been going back and forth trying to make guesses because you know, over the years I've heard them talk about different DC books that they've liked, but I don't know, would they, you know, if somebody said, give me three, I'll buy three DC books of whatever, you know, you pick for me, what would you pick? I don't know right off the top of my head. So it will be interesting to hear Sean and Keith's.
Which makes it completely uninteresting to listen to.
Mine is, like I said, when I get to mine, I'll go into where I was kind of, because Richie did what I thought he was going to do, and which is fine, but I'm going to go a little different, so.
Yeah, well, my first one's Battlestar Galactica.
Whoa, man. That's not DC.
But I really like the show.
The show's fantastic.
The show is great.
I love that show. Fantastic. There's no...
I kid.
All right.
So you guessed one of them. Which one? You guessed one for sure.
Okay, the one that I thought was going to be The Authority.
Yeah, Authority, absolutely.
Yep.
Authority by Warren Ellis, Brian Hitch, all the way through the... Mark Miller and Frank Quietly run.
Yeah, oh yeah.
That's good. That first, was it 29 issues? Excellent.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely love that run. Everything after that, unfortunately, and as much as I like Ed Brubaker, I'm pretty sure he worked on like the
Ed
next
Brubaker
run.
Did some stuff.
Didn't like it very much.
Abnett and Lanning did a run.
And I didn't like their run. Their run felt like it got really cut short, and I don't know what was going on there, but it didn't have the same feel and the same this is just really good kind of feeling to me that the original run.
No, the new trades they brought out, those two trades.
Yeah, you can get it all in two trades now. Yeah. It's clean, it's easy, it's amazing. It's
really set us up. So what's Authority about?
So Authority is you're dealing with characters that are kind of outside, obviously, the normal DCU, because initially it started out as a Wildstorm book. And they've since integrated some of these characters into DCU, like with Apollo and Midnighter. And those were originally Authority characters all the way back to what was that Image book?
Stormwatch.
I'm forgetting about now? Yeah, Stormwatch.
Stormwatch.
All the way back to there. Then you have the Doctor, and you have Jenny Sparks, and you had which turns into actually a different character halfway through.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Jack.
The guy who talks to cities.
Yeah,
I can't remember his last name.
Hawk.
I think so.
Yeah. Connor Hawk?
No. It's Hawksmoore.
Yeah, Hawksmoore. Jack Hawksmoore.
Jack Hawksmoore. That's right. Yeah. It's been a while since I've read it, but
who's the one who turns into liquid metal? I can't remember her name.
Oh, the engineer.
Yeah, engineer.
Yeah.
So they basically are a super team that decide they're going to save the world from itself.
Yeah.
And of course, a lot of the government on the Earth. I mean, they decide that they don't like that, so they try to get their own team to stop them. And that's a little bit later in the story, but I think the first arc is them.
It's them
battling what would be representation. No, it was them battling the first four were them battling the.
It's the clones and the
Chinese?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's been a while since I've read this.
It's been a while, but yeah.
Because I read it when it first came out, and that was early 2000s,
and the big thing, and this was the this book was when it came out was what they called widescreen storytelling, because Brian Hitch and the way they had done it was like a movie.
Yeah, it was very movie.
And people were that was a new thing at that time where people were like, wow.
But at your base level, you are still sitting with Marvel has your Avengers, DC had the Justice League, where all the biggest hitters got together. This was a super team of hitters and people that could solve problems and all this. And they had some different ideas about how did you solve the problem, because it wasn't directly about just a supervillain.
No.
It dealt with social issues.
It was very much world problems. Yeah. It was so, and I don't know. If you like your superhero books and you want a little bit of a different spin on them, this book's probably for you.
Yeah. Well, and the thing when I read it, the writing was so good, and when it went from Warren Ellis to Mark Miller, you know, he didn't miss a beat.
Oh, not at all.
And
well, I thought the Miller stuff was
Really good.
Way darker.
And like I said, we won't go into any spoilers here, but something happens towards the end of Miller's run that is talked about earlier.
Oh yeah.
Blew me away when I first read that. I went, what? Like Ellis has been talking about this since the beginning of his run, and he brought it.
So you're talking about the stuff with the engineer?
Which
part?
With the I believe so. Yeah, the time travel stuff.
Yeah, with the engineer.
Yes, that was awesome. Yes, it was. I remember reading that first time and was like, wow. And Frank Quietly drawing, it's great.
They established some really good characters here. That's why they can bled over into normal DCU, where you see like Midnighter and pieces like that.
Yeah, they started using them, especially in, like when they did New 52. They started using a hell of them for a little bit. So I think Stormwatch they reignited for the early.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, and for people who don't know, Apollo's going to be the Superman analog. Midnighter's the Batman analog. So I mean,
way angrier.
Way angrier, and he knows every single fight you're going to. going to do every single way you can fight.
The characters are not just so you've got points in time where you can just say, "Oh, that character's just a straight copy," but these are a little bit more interesting. There's a little bit more going on there. There's more developed backstory than just being a copy of somebody else's.
Oh yeah, they're not.
Well, they're pulled character. From different areas of what the superheroes sci-fi tropes are. I mean, you know, like the Doctor's your fringe science magic
kind of Doctor character. Who-ish a little bit
kind of Doctor Who-ish you know the Hawksmoor talks to cities
which
so he knows the beat on what's going on in every city he's ever been in and why it's complaining and pissed off. I mean it was just a really interesting story. I loved it.
Oh yeah, no, Authority's really good. I mean, yeah, great writers, great artists. It's a good one.
Alright, so for my second, I'm going to go with Gotham Central.
Nice.
By Ed Brubaker, Greg Rucka, and Michael Lark.
Yeah, that's great. Gotham Central's awesome.
I love Gotham Central because it was a different, like kind of like Marvel's, it was a different take on the superhero genre and the living in a world where there is superheroes kind of story.
Sure, yeah.
So you're actually part of Gotham, the Gotham PD, and you get involved in these cases that have, like, suddenly the Joker shows up or Mr. Freeze.
Yes.
And you get, like, you might get a panel or two of those characters, and you might get a panel or two of, like, Batman or Superman or whatever the hell.
Yeah, Flash.
But that's not really the central part of the story.
Nope.
So that's why I liked this book, is because it was, again, it was the human element mixed into a superhero world, and you're seeing everything from the human element eyes, just like Marvel's. That's why I liked the original Marvel story.
Yeah.
So
that's what I was going to compare it to.
And of course, it's Brubaker, and in my world, he has yet to go wrong. The guy is amazing. He's just a number one, hands down, fantastic
writer. And Rucka.
Writer.
I mean, yeah, it was Rucka, and it was Michael Lark, and I mean, it's... When they described it when it was coming out, they were like, it's Law and Order in
it was like Hill Street Blues or something like that.
It was like Law and Order in so you follow the cops, you follow them. That's where you get a lot more with the Renee Montoya.
Mm-hmm. That's where she got her start, wasn't it?
She was in Batman stuff before then, but she was one of the main characters in the book.
And I remember her predominantly being there than anywhere else.
And then that's when you get the changeover to on the Spectre stuff.
Right.
It's going to be in there too.
You then evolve later on to where this is some of the light source material for the Gotham TV show.
Yeah.
Because the angle of, again, following the individuals inside the police department kind of side is the focus of this book.
Oh, yeah. Like you said, I love this. I love that book as well. The I remember the very first time I read it. And this is not a spoiler because this is literally page two. These people bust into a house because they are investigating a crime, and all of a sudden Mr. Freeze is there and he freezes one of them, and the fact is that guy is now dead. And the police, dealing with that, you just felt from the first couple pages that this is not like, it's not campy, it's not like goofy fun. It is like, this guy's dead because Mr. Freeze froze him. How do you deal with that?
The darker feel side of it, for sure.
How do you deal with that as a human being with all these people around? And I think Batman only shows up 3 or 4 times in the whole 40 issue run.
Yeah, he's not there very much.
Not a lot, no. So, okay, I can dig that. Yeah.
So. Surprise.
I dig it. Okay. All right.
All right. So my last choice, Starman. Jimmy Robinson and Tony Harris.
I had written that down as a maybe on my huge list of stuff. So, okay.
Starman was originally a Golden Age superhero that they wanted to bring back. So they gave it to Jimmy Robinson because he's even said, "I'm the guy who brings back the Golden Age characters into the now time." So, but he wanted a different take on it, and the take he did on it was Starman's kid decides to take up the mantle instead of the original Starman, because he's kind of old, and actually I think he's dead.
No, it's being forced upon him.
Was his dad dead in this run or not?
His brother was dead.
The older brother
was dead. Okay.
The older brother was taking
this up. This is another one I've read back when it was out, so was...
But I've read it a little bit more. 90s? So, yeah, it was the older brother, and then a big thing happens... Yes. And the older brother's dead, and he doesn't want this.
No,
he's an antique hunter.
He doesn't want part of this.
Gig.
And his dad's not going to come back to it.
Nope.
Yeah, no.
So he ends up taking it.
Yeah, and it's good stuff,
This was great. 60... Or no, this was more issues than that. It was like in the 70s, I think.
Something like
it?
That, yeah.
I think it ran like 75 issues. I might be wrong.
It was,
on that.
Yeah,
it was pretty up there close quite a because bit. Remember, it had the Blackest Night issue that came back at like,
yeah,
81 like, or something.
Yeah, yeah,
it
was
81,
yeah,
then
yeah.
It was 80 issues. And I think it had, like they had a couple specials and
had
manual,
some specials
kind of
in there,
it.
Yep. Had a great villain, I guess, if you want.
Yeah.
with Shade.
Yep.
Who was fantastic. And it's a great comic where, because he does deal with different parts of the DC universe. He was also in JSA when they started that up with David Goyer and Jeff Johns and stuff.
I never read the JSA stuff.
Yeah, he was only in it for a little bit. I mean, a couple issues. But I mean, so it is in continuity. So yeah. He does show up and see people. But
they really used him much since then. And...
No, they haven't. They haven't since.
It's too bad.
It is too bad because he's an awesome character and it's one of the best runs to see, you know, the arc of a character
yeah,
and what happens.
The progression of this one character from where he starts up to where he ends up is a lot different.
Yeah, and yeah, oh yeah, it's the stuff that he did in that book was awesome with some of the flashbacks and some of the way that they draw.
Well, and I know if, like as far as Tony Harris goes, I know a lot of people. Like, I like his art a lot.
Sure, yeah.
And I've heard that he can be one of those polarizing artists where you either like his stuff or you don't, kind of mm-hmm. like Kelly Jones, because it is a style. And yeah. You always know his art when you see it. But, yeah, I absolutely... It had to be one of my top three. Since you confined me to DC and not Vertigo. I couldn't pick Vertigo, because you're mean.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely wanted to hear just like some of the main DC stuff. And Starman's, like I said, it was on the list of stuff that I was thinking about picking because it came out recently in 6 trades or hardcovers.
Yeah, they did the omnibus size
yep.
ones.
Mm-hmm. And that run's really good. When I first started getting into comics and when I was listening to the podcasts and things like that, the podcast that I listened to, their favorite story of all time was Starman. And at that time, you know, we're going over 10 years ago, Starman was super hard to find.
Oh, yeah.
Hard to find the issues. They didn't reprint them in trades. They did do
that
some
trades. That was before they actually
yep.
really did what they did with the omnibus.
If
trades.
I remember correctly, there were some trades, but they were so out of print.
There are. I've actually got a set of them at home.
Say hi, Richie.
About halfway through this.
Hi, Richie.
Richie's bouncing in and out.
Yep.
I'm a ghost. You don't hear me, boo.
And I remember them going, hey, you know, if you go on eBay right now, you're going to spend...
Ridiculous chunk.
$600 getting the issues. You're going to spend hundreds of dollars on the trades because they were out of print and hard to find. And I was like, I'll never be able to read this. And then they brought out, like Keith was saying, in the omnibus editions. And when I sat down and read it,
You were disappointed.
No, I was blown away. I thought it was really good. I thought it was really good. It was,
All right, so that's 3 surprises?
Yeah, I was thinking you might pick Gotham Central, but Starman, yeah, there you go. I dig that one.
There you go.
Yeah,
there's my 3.
All right, Zach, how about yours?
Okay, so, like I said, this was very hard for me because I'm a DC fanatic and I have a huge list here which I could go over, but I managed to pick it down to 3. And what I did, and this was on me, this wasn't on anybody else, we didn't talk about this beforehand, was that I wanted to pick DC Universe stories. And what I mean by that is that I wanted to do things that were trying to represent a lot of the DC Universe. As somebody else who is not here, one of his picks is going to be a central character. And is it one of the best DC stories ever? Yes, probably. It's in the top 5. But it's focused on one character. That's why I didn't pick Death of Superman in here. The very first thing that popped into my head in top 3s for me is going to be Death of Superman, but that's just on Superman. That's not a whole universe-spanning thing. So, for me, the first one that I picked was Crisis on Infinite Earths, written by Marv Wolfman.
I've never heard of this before.
Yeah, I know. And drawn by George Perez. And now they harken back to this all the time. This is where you get, you know, just flipping through this today, you know, they even did some of the homages in Rebirth, the one-shot special that just came out. Infinite Crisis is a sequel to this book. Flashpoint has things that are from this book. DC, the DC Universe, when this came out in the 80s, from now, has always harkened back to this.
So why did this story come about? Because there's a little bit of history behind
this story. So the big thing with this was that in the...
You don't really have to be sad about that, Zach.
In the Silver Age, they had done so many different things with so many different worlds that continuity, the thing that Marvel was getting known for, was, you know, the continuity. They all are in the same, you know, city or in the same world. That got really hard for people to hold on to, because people were starting to collect DC Comics and were trying to figure it all out.
Because how many worlds did they have, technically?
They had tons. I mean...
It was Infinite Earths, right?
It was Infinite Earths. Yeah, I mean, and that was one of the biggest things, was the classic JSA-JLA crossovers. Every year, they did that, starting with Justice League 22, and they did it every year since then, where these different worlds would come and they would have an adventure and they would leave. So if you were sitting down and trying to figure out, well, when did this Flash story happen with this Superman story, it didn't really mesh. And so DC decided
they were going to clean up.
They were going to clean up the continuity.
Hit the reset button.
That's right.
Hit the reset button.
First time.
Yes.
We won't do it again. We can get it right this time.
They'll do it the first time.
So they
won't need a new 52, a rebirth.
Yes. This was the
identity.
First one. Yeah. This was
our identity here.
Final hour.
Final crisis. All that
zero
stuff.
Zero hour.
Absolutely.
How many hours are there?
There's been a lot. This is the first one though. And funny and interesting enough, they went to Alan Moore first, and they said, can you do something like this? And
he said, nah, son, Watchmen.
He said, yeah, I can do it. And the original character was going to be John Constantine, and it was going to be called Twilight of the Gods, and it was going to be this crazy mythology ending thing. And he eventually lost interest, and they didn't want to do that. They went to Marv Wolfman, and he said, okay, I have an idea. And him and George Perez put out this 12-issue series, and that's where the history got brought down to one Earth. So there's one Superman, there's one Batman. You know, there was a timeline where, you know, the JSA happened. Tons of things happened out of this book. So... And that's one of the things with Crisis on Infinite Earth, is that it is a meaty read. This is not a... some people have brought up online and even in conversations talking about this book is that it's not going to be an easy breezy fun read. This isn't something you sit down for 30 minutes and you're done, you know, and you go, oh, there is so much packed into this book because they were putting in so many things about the history of the DC Universe in here. This book has thousands of characters drawn by George Perez in here. Most of them don't speak, but that's one of the funnest things for DC fans to come in here and see all the different characters that are touched upon, because they're all people that the people who grew up in the Silver Age, who they loved, they show up here. And the basic premise is there's a rift, something happens and it starts wiping out all these universes, and they don't know how to stop it. They're wiping out all these different multiverses,
all the parallel universes.
Yep. And so, you know, all these DC characters and all these alternate characters are getting wiped out, and the story is, you know, stopping that and making sure that the universe stays. And it has some really iconic moments. You've probably seen some of the covers with Superman holding Supergirl's body. That's
Flash.
Where the Flash. that's where this is the story. I mean, this is a long time, so spoiler warning, yeah. I guess. But
Flash has been involved for every major event.
But 30 years is not.
Yeah, 30 years is not a spoiler.
This is where Barry Allen died, and this is where he, as many people have called him,
the final fate of the Flash.
Yep. And this is where he got, as Geoff Johns and other people have called him, the sainthood for the DC universe, because he was the person over Superman, over everybody else, to stop the crisis and to make sure that the DC universe continues on. Wally West took his place, who was his friend in the Teen Titans. So, I mean, the history of the DC Universe, if you want to get into it, this is a great place to do it. It's going to be pretty meaty. It's going to be one of the great things. I have the Absolute, and in the Absolute, they talk about some of the characters who I've never even seen before. You know, so if you're somebody who wants to know about every single character and what their history is, this may drive you a little nuts. But the main story is pretty straight.
Man.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is that, but
Googles.
It's so much fun to learn about all the different things that the DC Universe did in the Silver Age and how they came to a close in Crisis on Infinite Earths. And this gives you a good taste of, like I said, the JSA, Superman, Batman, Flash, Green Lantern, you name it, it's going to be in Crisis on Infinite Earths. This is going to be the, like I said, for DC stuff, this is going to be the number one for, some of the past knowledge. If you're interested in past knowledge of the DC Universe, you have to read Crisis on Infinite Earths. And then when you read stuff since then, a lot of it will make sense. Even little things like how the Flash show up in the different event books harken back to this. Little things like that. So
what's number two?
So number two, and this, everyone knew this was coming if they knew me, but I actually went with a whole run, kind of like we did with Abnett and Lanning's space stuff. The very first thing that jumped in my head was Blackest Night, because Blackest Night is my number one favorite DC story of all time over anything that we can talk about here. But I agree with Keith, when we've talked about this in the past, is that the real impact of Blackest Night is reading from Green Lantern Rebirth, which was the miniseries that Geoff Johns did to bring back Hal Jordan, all the way through Blackest Night. So that's going to be about 4 or 5 years of Green Lantern comics there. But if you read that whole run, it is one of the best runs in comics, in my opinion. I've read it many times. It's and he plants seeds in Rebirth that happen in Blackest Night. It's really cool to see how he does it. I think it's a good representation of a great DC comic book. There are tons of characters that weave in and out of the story, you know, so it's not just going to be Hal Jordan and you never see anybody else. No, you're going to see Batman, you're going to see the Justice League, you're going to see the Flash within these pages. But Geoff Johns's run on this was just awesome. He did stuff with Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps. He brought them back to an A-list number one title at DC Comics. The Green Lantern movie, no matter how you feel about it, would never have happened if this run
wasn't for that.
If it wasn't for this, because when this was coming out, this was the one of the number one books at DC when it was coming out, when he was writing this.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, the things that he just does with the continuity and the history, the things I love about Geoff Johns, this is where my first exposure to him was, and that made me want to go and read everything else he did, because he really makes it good for people to jump in. You can read this, and he's going to bring up so many different Green Lantern history moments and use those. The biggest thing that he brings up in Rebirth was, why are the Green Lanterns, why can't they do anything against the color yellow? That's a thing that's been around since the Silver Age, and no one's ever really touched upon that. And he came up with that there is an entity called Parallax, which was the name of the villain in the 90s that Hal Jordan became. That was the name of the entity that took over Hal Jordan. That's why he did his crazy, destroying the Guardians and killing Kilowog and all that sort of thing. That was an impurity in the Lantern. And
he stubbed his toe and went on a rampage.
Well, maybe. I mean, kind of in the 90s, that's kind of how it happened. But in this, he took that one thing and made it into this awesome story. And out of that, he came out with these different colored lantern rings and brought Sinestro back as one of the best villains in the DC Universe. So, I mean, Green Lantern,
Black Hand.
Black Hand made him super creepy, super unsettling. Yeah, he took so many different things from Green Lantern and made it, just an amazing run with what he did. You could tell that he loves Green Lantern, and funny enough, his favorite character is the Flash, but I think that he'll always be known as, the Green Lantern writer.
The Green Lantern dude.
Yeah. So if you want to read a great run in comics, I would definitely read, starting with Green Lantern Rebirth, going to Blackest Night. There's many trades that you can pick up. They've done some omnibuses of it. But it's definitely worth it. It's definitely worth the read.
All right.
My last pick, and this one I knew was going to be some people... don't like it, but as one of the best, this is a personal favorite of mine. It's going to be 50 Chew, the weekly comic book that came out in 2006.
Has it already been that long?
Yeah. It's been a long
Holy
time.
Crap.
This series was written by Jeff Johns, Greg Rucka, Grant Morrison, and Mark Waid. The layouts for every issue was done by Keith Giffen. And they had tons of different artists. I think...
There's a bunch.
There's a lot. You had Eddie Burroughs. You had Howard Porter. You had Joe Bennett. You had Todd Knock. I mean, there's tons of artists on here. The basic premise of this was Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman are gone. And it's a whole entire year. This series happened in real time. Every week this book came out. And it was a year in the DC Universe without them. And the other superheroes had to pick up the slack.
And step up.
And step up. And so this book has... it has Animal Man, Adam Strange, Steel, Booster Gold, Black Adam was one of the main characters in this, Elongated Man, The Question.
Batwoman.
Batwoman, yep.
That's kind of where Batwoman started.
That's where she started. And so this is the book that made me really fall in love with the entire DC Universe. This, not just Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, the main characters. This is the book that made me a Booster Gold fan. This is the book that made me just love some of these ancillary characters, because you follow them for this entire year. You follow them through their ups and downs, the crazy stuff that happens. The writers are awesome on this. And going through this, you know, it's like a good television series. And that's how they approached this, was that they were going to write a television show every week. Every week you're going to come back to, you know, these different characters and see what's going on. And there's so many different storylines and plot lines that go on here during this book. It's hard to describe it, you know, really quickly on this. But it made me a Black Adam fan. Black Adam, this was the book that made him a prominent villain. This is the one that brought Booster Gold back into the spotlight when people were having the, you know, Booster Gold fan club shirts and things like that. He made an appearance on Smallville around this time. And this kind of harkens out of Identity Crisis, if you read that as well. There's some threads that are brought over from that. So, I mean, if you want to know about the DC Universe as a whole and some of the ancillary stuff, not just what Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman are up to, this is a great book for that. Okay. So, yeah, good stuff.
So Richie's jumped in back with us.
Ha ha! I've been here the whole time.
Yeah.
You've been turkey all along.
I've just been really quiet, unusually.
Well, you know, Richie, we're just going to lead it right into what are your picks?
Let's do it.
What do you like in DC?
It's so great that I'm going to have a DC conversation without Zach. I feel very undefended right now. but I will say
if you just got told that you're in the room right this minute, you got promoted to leader of the DC
I know, that's really daunting.
So don't mess up.
I will try not to. I'm going to start with the obvious, because everyone knew I was going to pick
Dark Knight Returns.
Yes, Dark Knight Returns. It's done, all right?
So moving on.
But I need to explain that.
Not really.
Yeah, you do.
Oh, no, you're wasting our time.
Hold on. I got stopwatch.
12 seconds. Dark Knight Returns entered me into the entire comic book realm. It also introduced me to a different take on characters.
12 seconds are up.
Yeah, listen to him speak fast.
I know, he's freaking out. It's so good. I can't handle this. Why did I? What happened? I want to go back work. Did you guys hear me cry out there, by the way? I'm sorry about that. I had a moment. So, yeah, Dark Knight Returns is just one of those
those books that will forever be, when I hear best comic ever, it just slaps me in the face. There's
To me, at this point in life, it's Comics 101. You probably should have read it by now.
Yeah, it does sit kind of like with Watchmen and things where you're just like, if you, it's just something that has to be read. And I'm learning that even that repertoire is something that I'm, you know, need lessons on. Like, there's a lot of 101s, like Old Man Logan, that just should be known.
Yeah, but you didn't really read a lot of Marvel.
No, I didn't.
And you find some of those. Like, so here's the thing. Old Man Logan is going to go down that way.
Uh-huh.
It's still a little
early. It's not quite there yet.
It's still seasoning. It's mm-hmm. still boiling and percolating a little bit right now. Because it's got to still hold up that test of time. I don't think it'll happen, but you have the opportunity there. If a more amazing Wolverine story comes and knocks it off its perch,
right?
Then you know that would be the one in there. Dark Knight Returns has been held up at this level for 30 years.
Yes, yeah.
We have a lot of time. We can't. It's very hard. Even when you get something as great as a Scott Snyder run on Batman,
which is probably the closest we come.
Yeah, it's a fantastic run, and that will continue to build with mythos and with opinion and things like that and get bigger and badder. But yet, we're still not even coming close to like talking about, oh, is that better than Dark Knight Returns? Because this one's been Hall of Fame deemed and stamped.
Absolutely. So
what was the other Wolverine story that was pretty up there for the longest time?
Well, the original mini?
Yep.
Are you going to go with that?
Yep. I mean, that was up on the standard.
That's Frank Miller.
Yep, and that's Frank Miller.
But
just to give Richie a little nod.
Yeah.
No, and
everybody gets
and
one.
You want to talk about the Marvel I read? Yeah, Frank Miller. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. It will not turn around. You'll still be talking about that Wolverine story for a while. We're not going to kill it.
Not at all.
Our belief is Old Man Logan will be held up as the pinnacle.
Yeah.
It has to do with how
we totally just hijacked
we stopped talking about Marvel right now. We were talking about DC. We've already had our Marvel discussion.
We got there. I didn't even have to bring up Amalgamus on my top three DC stories.
Daily Avengers.
No, stop it.
The non-existent stop Batman it. Versus Wolverine.
Yeah, that I love that book. But anyway, Frank Miller, Dark Knight Returns, obs. We're going to move on to my second pick, which would be JLA, The Tower of Babel, which is one of my just... And that's another slightly obvious...
another Batman fanboy story.
It's totally a fanboy story. It's lip service to Batman, but yeah, I think...
It absolutely is.
But I think it's done
this
well.
This is the weakness for every character.
Yeah, it is the...
Because I love this JLA run, personally.
Oh, totally.
Absolutely loved it.
Yeah. I like the
Grant Morrison, Mark Waid, and... Mm-hmm. I still own this whole run.
Yeah. it's just the thing I dislike about it is that
this is when they find out that Batman's truly just a giant
dick. Yeah, he doesn't trust anyone.
Nope.
And
I've got this ring just kind of packed away just in case you lose your mind and I have to kill you.
Yeah, just crazy. You know. I think the only thing I dislike about it is that because it is the lip service to the fan that it is, there's a lot of, you know, Bat Bros that take it to the argument, like, this is why Batman's the best character. There are many reasons why Batman's the best character, and I'm not one of those people that think he can beat everybody, but...
Well, yeah, we've had this conversation.
He's not better than the Sentry, right?
No.
He's better than the Sentry, yes. But I think that the
what
story...
What about Squirrel Girl?
He's better than Squirrel Girl.
I don't know. Squirrel Girl beat Galactus.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Stop talking about Marvel.
Has Batman beat Galactus?
Stop it. Stop, both of you, stop it. We are going to
this
do this
game
DC
is so easy. We're up like 4-0. Like, it's just great.
It's just a beatdown. It's like, this is awful. No, in the DC universe, I do like my Batman to be very prepared and not trusting anyone.
Batman created the Brother Eye.
Too, yeah, and it was...
Which was a really horrible idea on his part.
It's not great, no. Batman in the comics could be compared... Oh, not even... I almost did it myself.
Compared to?
I'm not going to say
compared
it.
To?
I'm not going to say it.
Bring it out. We're not going
to
move on until...
Iron Man in the movies.
There you go.
Because he keeps creating stuff and it just turns around on him. And wow, that probably shouldn't have done that. But that's... Bruce has always, to me, been...
Superman just needs to fly him out into... out of the atmosphere into the into the space. Through, yeah. Maybe toss him in the sun.
But Batman's prepared.
He's prepared.
Oh, I'm sure he's prepared.
He created red kryptonite.
Yeah, I'm sure he's really prepared to kill Superman.
Anywho,
somebody who's infinitely faster than he is. Could fly up to space and shoot him with his laser eyes and kill him. That guy?
In a future episode of I Want More Comics podcast.
That comes later.
We'll discuss why Batman is both the greatest and simultaneously the worst.
You guys are such... I'm trying to not let it affect me,
but it's
affecting me.
It's so cute.
It's so adorable, isn't it? No.
You're adorbs.
You guys need to read... If you haven't read... Tower of Babel. The whole run, honestly, is great.
The JLA. This is the JLA, not Justice League. It's JLA, that happened in...
JLA.
Was this 2004?
Yeah.
Okay, it's that 2004 run.
And just...
If anybody knows, I'm terrible with dates.
So if he's wrong...
So if I'm wrong...
Oh, well.
It's because I'm terrible with dates.
We show you the trade.
Which is... Oh, look at it. So my last pick is... Kind of a.
Better I thought, not be Batman.
No, it's not, actually. It's
I'm punching you if it's Batman.
I really.
It's Robin.
It's a Robin.
If it's any Bat family, I might hit you.
I can't then say what my. No. No, my.
Need other things, Richie.
We're talking about DC. I can sit in my Batman corner.
It was 2000.
2000?
Okay. Yeah,
99. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's like I said, I couldn't remember.
Back to reality.
Wow. So, my last.
Okay, I'm gearing up.
Is.
Gearing up.
He's trying to strike me now. Is going to be Forever Evil from the new 52 series.
Batman's in it.
He is. They started out by, you know, dishonoring Dick Grayson and unmasking Nightwing, so that's nice.
Never heard of her.
Ooh, those are dirty words. You're just biting now. You're just swinging. This has turned into a Fight Club.
It's for me.
Forever Evil is an interesting pick because I think it's a little too new to call it, you know, greatest. Top three or whatever.
Yeah, but this is your tastes. Yeah.
But
that's fine.
And I didn't want to just go with legendary stories. There are good stories being written now, too.
Well, you weren't necessarily here when I picked my three, and my three mm-hmm. and a lot of people's list won't ever make it.
What do you mean?
There.
I was here the whole time.
Yeah, you were the turkey all along,
magic.
I remember.
There is no spoon.
But yeah, since you weren't here, my three picks, Starman, Gotham Central, mm-hmm. and Authority.
Okay.
And
yeah.
those are probably not going to be on a lot of people's lists.
Right.
So
Forever Evil for me took a perspective... It took something that I know pretty well and then skewed it enough to where I really latched on to the take. And I don't normally do that with big shifts or change, but in the 52 universe, I was really digging on Lex Luthor and him kind of changing his stance on being a hero. And in Forever Evil, without giving any spoilers away, there's a lot of Earth 3 essentially is the evil Earth, and Pandora, everybody's favorite character, right? Pandora. Yeah. She's
not around anymore.
Yeah, she's not. I wonder why. But
may have been squished.
Yeah. She might have been
She may have went the
evaporated.
Way of...
Evaporated.
Yeah. She might have went the way of an ink-flooded gentleman. But, no, for Forever Evil, she opens her what we find out as a mother box to Earth 3, and a bunch of people come running out of Earth 3.
Why you gotta be opening mother boxes? Right? You never mess with those.
Probably not a good idea.
And
I just found this. Oh God!
It's this Justice League that's skewed evil Justice League members like Ultraman and Owlman, and they're running from their dying planet of the Anti-Monitor. So they come and they're kind of distraught, and their only mission is to they see the Earth that they are in now and realize that they can take this place over,
mm-hmm.
and they do that.
But and they also want to take it over for each one of themselves.
Correct. So
they're not exactly. Yeah,
so then they start turning on each other, and it's just to me a really great take because now these guys are such baddies that the baddies think that they're not. You know, all of a sudden it's good and evil versus evil, real evil. And you have Lex Luthor, Captain Cold, Sinestro, all these people working with the Justice League to try to stop these people. And the really ironic part is that Lex is, by the end of it, truly does try to save the world, you know? And from there, all sorts of things happen, and it's...
It's because he opens another mother box.
That's not what happens.
It sets up and it builds out to exactly what even we're doing with today with the Lex versus, you know, that world's Lex versus
the old world Superman
and the opinions and all that. So it has lasting impact.
I think that it was written well enough that it will be a recommendation for all time, especially with the new Superman being so good and the contrast of that Superman to this Lex and where they take that relationship. I think that the punctuating part of where this Lex's origin really starts is in that book. And from there, I think it'll be gangbusters. So.
All right.
Solid stuff.
Yeah. Those are my picks.
All right, I'm standing by him.
I'm standing by him.
That's right.
Tower of Babel is not just a 15-year-old story about Batman just beating everybody up. It's great. It's actually really well written.
So you started off yours talking about, you know, the softball in Dark Knight Returns,
yes,
right? Because it's too easy. Yeah, I didn't care. I wasn't going to hide away from the softballs because it is some of the greatest stories, and they still have to be my opinion as opposed to just generalized great stories.
But right.
I went right to Watchmen. I mean, yeah. I'm taking Watchmen as my number one. No problem. Mm-hmm. Plenty has been said about this book. Plenty has been talked about. Plenty on this podcast has been talked about by this book. But
issue 4 is one of your top favorite comics of all time.
It is. Mm-hmm. I just reread it last night before I framed it. So, I believe that one of the strongest points on why this book is there is that it raises the bar for other books to try to achieve in the way of dialogue, character development, deconstruction, pieces like that, to look at things and just not the surface of just, can the Hulk punch that fast? Is the Superman that strong? You know, things like that. It goes way beyond into emotional and psychological.
Even what he just had, Moore had drawn in the panels, there was subtext there. I mean, you could dissect the hell out of this book.
Well, we have a whole book here called Philosophy of Watchmen, which is all about that. And it's philosophy is probably the biggest reason why this resonates with me, is to, when you read it through on the first time surface to get the points, and then you go back through to get the deeper, and you're one of the biggest deals inside that is to see that every one of the superheroes on its base level, forget that they have different sets of powers, because reality is we don't have powers in this world except for Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah.
Everybody else invents their own abilities to do what they want to do. But their psychological makeup and what they believe in and how they act upon that is what's really the difference in life.
Yeah.
And to see that side inside AEO as to be the drive and direction and angle, that's just so cool to me that it stands above the rest.
I agree. I think Watchmen is one of the few comics that truly like hit me in the core. Like, wow, this is just, you really have to think here, like consequence and you know, authority and what.
Well, for me, it started out just as like a murder mystery, and then turned into something so much more.
Just opened and opened and opened.
Like, wait, what? No, wait, what?
that turn four was just blew me away.
Yeah. So the leading into my second pick is the same type of situation of dealing with something on a thought-provoking level, and that's Superman Red Son.
Night. Yep.
You know, again, the ideology of what does Superman look like if raised under a different set of morals?
Mm-hmm.
And the going deeper into that stuff, the going inside of it to say, you know, like the truth, justice, and the American way were never taught to you. Instead, it's for, you know, the good of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing that you also get to play, it's real similar to like your Forever Evil, Lex Luthor in a completely different role.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get to have that amount of angle there. And also a book that is way more, it's just like the first one, way more dependent upon dialogue, character development, thoughts,
mm-hmm.
and the pieces that build upon that.
Right. I agree completely. I was going to make the connection to Forever Evil as well. It's just you have a story, you know a story, and then you tweak that story to kind of embrace the same mythology but a different you know, ideology of it, and it just creates an entirely different take. Yeah. You know, and it's entertaining. No, but the only way that works, you can't just throw those around. The only way it works is if it's done correctly. If the character itself still kind of follows that core of the character, like that Superman in Red Sun is still Superman.
Yeah.
It's just Superman raised differently.
Right.
And that's hard to do. It's easy to say, like, let's make a story that changes Superman's origin and whatnot and still make it Superman. But you can't just do that. You have to write really well to still capture the main core character and then push them through.
But it gets to play with one of my favorite pieces, which is the subconscious knowledge of the reader.
Yeah.
Subconsciously, as we're reading a Superman story, we have all these ideals built in. We think of Superman this and this and pure and just and all these different things. Mm-hmm. And so there's these assumptions based upon our past knowledge.
Right.
Now, in Superman Red Sun, we get to play with all those assumptions. We don't have to bring it up. We don't have to point the finger at it because we're already thinking about why is this different. But then the differences and the similarities meet together to show you that you're still looking at the same character. Yeah. You're still fighting the same ideas and all this, and you're still getting to see the core come through here. It's, you know, it's well done that he becomes a propaganda piece. Mm-hmm. Is the best way to put it, with the Cold War angle that's demonstrated inside this and all that. But yet, it's not like just because we're Americans and they're Russians that he's evil.
Right.
It's not that clean.
Not even close.
So I like that it was well done, it was well developed like that, and it was put together in such a way to express.
Yeah.
It's a great pick.
And now the third one is completely opposite of my reasoning of the first two. My third one is the Batwoman storyline in Detective, done by Rucka and J.H. Williams.
Oh, nice.
So the whole reason why I love...
Oh, yeah, I was going to pick that?
Yeah, the whole reason I was
thinking about it, and I was like...
So I love this deep-thinking, psychological Watchmen, deep-thinking, look-at-everything Superman, and I love this total visual storytelling inside Batwoman. It's still a good story, even if you took away all the great visuals. Oh, yeah. It's still a good story. It's a good character. There's good stuff inside there, especially this whole thing about the sisterish, this, you know, going back and forth, and this villain's a villain or not, you know, and all. But the way to tell the story with the visual paneling, the way to tell the story with, you know, like, well, really Williams feeling that you're drowning during
a master.
You know the page I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
You feel like you're drowning along with the characters because of the way everything looks. And, you know,
if somebody else hadn't bought it, I would have bought that page.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
But it was gone.
Jeez. I would have bought that so hard.
On this podcast, we've talked about J.H. Williams a couple times.
I love J.H. Williams.
He will always be my example of, like, you know, paneling. And how to expressly tell a story without words. Yeah. His ability to adapt, to construct, and to create they're uncomparable.
Change art style to fit the story.
Anything,
there's not many people that can do that.
Yeah, you guys tell the story all the time about, you know, him working with his wife and
for Promethea.
For
everything, actually.
Yeah. And it's just... It comes through... It is... What I'm trying to say is it doesn't falter in this Batwoman story at all.
No, I had a hard time understanding the comic book collector that chases the artist only.
Right.
Because to me, I was chasing the story only.
Absolutely.
Like that was my core and all this until this Batwoman. And now I can get where they get something. They get, you know, those collectors that are out there that are chasing the artists, they get something different about their enjoyment and their pleasure inside that by the art side of things that I just never honestly was getting. I could point it and say, yeah, that's good Jim Lee art. That's that's really good Kubert on that X-Men. That's really good. You know, those are nice things. I love Potasio, but I
for you it was not integral to the story for the panels to tell the story.
Way too many books that I've only read the words and I can barely remember the panels.
Right.
It's way too many books that I've done like that because it's just my style. It's just my reading style.
Yeah, yeah.
But in this one, I sat there and I just, you know, you stop and you stare at it.
You stare at it.
You're just like, I gotta look at this again.
Actually, I think this was the first time I hunted down every single printing and variant for a book.
For anything?
This was the one detective. I think this was the first time I ever did that.
Yeah.
Because I, like I said, love J.H. Williams art. I had to go find all the covers because they were all different.
Right. And, yeah.
I'm a little torn. We bought the Batman collection. I was a little torn. I thought about the idea of going in there and just grabbing all this.
You should have.
Because I don't know if I'd appreciate it that much. You know what I mean? Like for just to have it kind of thing. But this was just so good. And then this opened my eyes to the other possibilities. And of course, I've been a fan of J.H. ever since then. Yeah. When I really think of that, I think of the Sandman Overture stuff. I actually haven't read Promethea yet. I know I have to. I know it's on my list of should have been done by nows. But, you know, it's definitely going to happen. Yeah. It's just hasn't
when
hit
it
the,
happens.
Just should read Desolation Jones, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because you did buy that page.
I bought that page.
Yeah.
Desolation Jones, I haven't read.
Yeah, that's Warren Ellis.
Okay.
It's good stuff.
With J.H. Williams?
Yeah.
Oh.
J.H. Williams has worked with every heavy hitter or writer that you could possibly imagine.
That's a dirty
combo. He's been lucky enough to work with them all.
That's awesome. That's a dirty combo.
Yeah.
So my question is with that book, because the story is good, I would agree with you, does the story matter at all? Could it have been a crap story and that's still been one?
No, I think of this because the point of what emphasized the art to me was, like I said, when it got to the point where the story is drowning and things like that, I had to feel that in the art.
Okay.
So I had to feel that emotional charge and going along with the story. It's kind of like that really good, not blockbuster level, but like Memento, Donnie Darko kind of movie where you're like, this all glues together. This all feels right. This all meets there. So I definitely don't want to downplay Rucka's point in this book because I think it's really good.
Yeah, I agree
with
that.
Because I'll tell you, I would definitely hold this better than I would the beginning of the New 52 Batwoman, which is all J.H. Williams also.
Yeah.
And I don't attach to that story as much.
Yeah.
Oh, except there's the Amy Reader stuff in there too.
Yeah. And I think it looks great. It's visually there. I don't think that the story, like honestly right now, I can't remember it. I can't 100% remember what the content of the story was. I remember looking at it and reading it, and it was beautiful, but I can't really remember what exactly happens in the story. Whereas this one, like, I remember the steps. I remember how it ends.
You not only remember the story, you remember the paneling. Like, yeah, you can... It's dot for dot. This is the next...
That's where it stands out. So, no. Okay. Plot mattered.
Yeah, that's all I was thinking, because J.H. Williams is good enough to carry a story without... having a good content.
I do like Desolation Jones, just to jump back to that real quick.
Right.
But it's about Hitler's missing sex tape.
Okay. So,
little different context.
Yes.
And it might not be for everybody.
No.
Well, and I haven't read it, but what I remember seeing of it and all this is it's not... It may be good quality art, but it's not the same style.
It's not the same style.
You don't get this...
Absolutely. It was much more, for J.H. Williams, a dry...
Yeah.
A dry panelization, dry comic, you know, storytelling. He was trying to get more to the crime element, cut and chase of the story than he was, like you said, the drowning scene where you can feel that.
Or the scene I'm really thinking of where he's got the paneling in the shape of the symbol.
Yeah,
Batwoman's symbol.
Oh yeah, that was excellent.
This is how good the story is. The paneling's great.
All he said was the paneling with the symbol, and
all of us are on it.
Well, in that same panel, you see her flipping and kicking and doing stuff,
and close up on the face.
Yeah,
and close up on this.
And it makes it a point to actually put a, you know, square box around the face. You know to focus on this for that second to get the feel of where you're going in the story.
Somebody else kicks in any other book, you kick somebody through a window and you see the shattered window pane and the person's body flying out. In this one, all the panels break that way.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Like it's just it was blindingly obvious. Why doesn't everybody do this? But then
he's definitely a groundbreaking artist as far as how he uses panels. Yeah. I mean, all the way back to Will Eisner, all the way back to Winsor McKay, all the way back to anybody who's broken the mold of what you do with panelization, what you do with your storytelling in the art. He's one of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
There's a intelligence to J.H. Williams that we've talked to him. We've met the guy. He's an intelligent guy.
He's a super smart guy.
Mm-hmm. But there's an intelligence that comes through in the art. Because there's quite often that you... I mean, I've talked to artists that Potasio's a great, intelligent guy. but I don't get necessarily just straight up intelligence when I look at his art. You know what I mean?
Well, he's a totally different style.
It is. But I'm kind of like elevating J.H. Williams on this because it's just that smart to be able to present it and to kind of get to that level and figure out a way to express that, because that's what he does better than the other people.
Absolutely.
Is that, you know, it's you. And I don't mean by everybody and all this, because there's styles. We talked about the death of Superman, where it went from smaller panels to larger panels and all this.
The very final episode, it was full page, two page spreads.
You know what? That's intelligent, and that's really good, and to have that, and it definitely worked with inside the idea of how to story tell. But this was striking. This was really, really impressive.
Agreed.
Nice.
All right.
So, guys, I think we're wrapping it up. I think we've gotten to it. We've already looked at the racks this week, so we're going to be back on Pixel of the Week next week.
Yes. I'll have a nice little surprise next week.
For sure.
So.
Excellent. Are you going to be able to talk about it? Because we already sold out of it today.
Yeah, I will. I was able to at least order 10 more. So
that's a good thing.
But thanks for hanging out with us and listening for another episode, guys. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Take care.
Bye.